This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Moran in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola started in motion. Brady takes the snap. Rolls right, throws to the end zone. Catches Brady. Touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostkowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the upright, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you to our Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium and our third edition of the Bob Soucy Show, of course, previewing week three between the New England Patriots and the Oakland Raiders, with the Pats looking to win their home opener and extend their streak, of course, against the Raiders. Pats have won the last three against the Oakland Raiders, a team that has fallen on hard times the last decade or so since Bill Callahan led Oakland against John Gruden in Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl. This is a team that has not had a winning season over the course of the last 11 years and finds itself at 0-2 coming into Foxborough to take on the Patriots. And also, of course, trying to snap a long losing streak on the East Coast. The Raiders have lost 14 straight in the Eastern time zone. And 2 weeks ago, they were in New York, beaten by the Jets 19-14 before falling in the home opener in Oakland last week and falling very soundly to the Houston Texans by a 30-14 final. But let's talk about the Patriots for a moment, of course. After the disappointing second half in particular and the loss in Miami to begin the year, the Patriots last week fell behind Minnesota by a 7-0 score, but then Devin McCourty with one of the early turning points, a 60-yard interception return on Minnesota's second series of the day, set up the Patriots at the one. Stephen Ridley cashed in two plays thereafter with a touchdown, his first of the new year, and the Patriots were on their way to a 30-7 victory. Now, 30 points, of course, generated by the Pats overall, but much of the scoring, including the touchdown by Ridley, set up by the defense or special teams, or in fact recorded by the defense or special teams. It was McCourty's theft that set up the touchdown run by Ridley. It was a later interception by Darrell Revis that enabled the Patriots to cash in for a touchdown, and of course for the Pats as well a little bit later on, really with the game sealing play in my mind late in the first half, although there were still 30 minutes remaining in the contest officially. It was the Chandler Jones field goal block and then return of that said block kick that scored a touchdown in the waning seconds of the second quarter and gave the Pats what proved to be an insurmountable lead, continuing to seize momentum on the day in Minnesota and put the Vikings out of reach. And the Patriots, of course, win it going away against an NFC foe. Now the Patriots, of course, getting set for their first home game, as we've noted. It has been a long time since the Pats were at Gillette. We are looking forward to the opportunity to call a game in our spacious broadcast booth with the outstanding vantage point on the concourse near the 50-yard line. Scott Zolak and yours truly for 98.5 The Sports Hub and our Patriots Radio Network this Sunday with a 1 o'clock kickoff. Pats haven't been here since week three of the preseason, so in the time in between, they've gone to New York to play the Giants in the preseason finale, and then, of course, opened on the road in Miami and versus Minnesota with that win at TCF Bank Stadium last Sunday. Some thoughts about that game. I know much has been made about the post-game reaction of Tom Brady and his brief comments in the post-game press conference, and as well his appearance in that press conference, not only the verbal language, but the body language, the facial expressions as well. Certainly far from fully satisfied, and for a good reason. In my opinion, as I was asked on our flagship station Monday morning, 98.5 The Sports Hub, appearing with Tutcher and Rich, you know, why would Tom Brady be disappointed about the performance of the Patriots coming off the 37 win? And several things stood out in that particular game. The Patriots recorded some short fields, didn't fully capitalize. They got the ball at Minnesota's 45 and settled for a field goal. They got the ball at the 31 after a punt return by Julian Edelman, and in fact went backwards and had to punt it back to Minnesota on that particular series. And you go back to the previous week, they were accorded a short field in Miami with a chance to take the lead against the Dolphins, down by just three, taking over at the 45-yard line late in that game and could not score as well. So that's an issue the Patriots have to solve, and related to it is the failure to convert frequently enough on third down. So for the Pats last week, again, a couple of issues offensively still to be resolved, but clearly it was an offensive performance that from the outset set the tone. Even with a three-and-out possession to begin the game for the Patriots, they ran the ball with Stephen Ridley. They ran behind a lot of heavy sets. They used an extra tackle in Cameron Fleming as a tight end. A great deal, 28 snaps in the game for Cameron Fleming, the rookie from Stanford. There was a clear objective for the Patriots to find a balance between run and pass. There were only 22 pass attempts, and for the most part, the Patriots in that particular game against the Minnesota Vikings certainly looked to protect Tom Brady, establish the running game, be very physical with Minnesota, and the Pats did not use as many three receiver sets, as many spread formations as we're accustomed to seeing, and that was certainly a big factor, not only in the outcome ultimately, but as well the process in the statistics. And again, it's been a question that has been issued this week. Not only was Tom Brady unhappy about the performance overall, at least dissatisfied with the performance for the offense, knowing it can get better. And in Brady's words, we didn't play the way we're capable of playing. But some have wondered statistically whether the offense is diverse enough. And again, a lot of that was a byproduct of the way the game was structured, the way the Patriots played that game last Sunday, in my viewpoint, and Josh McDaniels as well shared a similar sentiment on Tuesday in his teleconference, that we didn't see as many different receivers involved in great part, again, because of the offensive approach with the fewer three-receiver sets, the fewer spread formations, and again, that reliance so heavily on the run game, and in particular using the double-stack tight ends, Michael Holman, Al Anui, and Rob Gronkowski on a more limited basis, but also incorporating James Devlin more heavily as well in the run game and that extra tackle in Cameron Fleming. Those are some of the things we're going to talk about today. We will be joined by the aforementioned Who Man, Michael Holman, Al Anui, also coming up a bit later on, Scott Zolak, my partner on the radio broadcast, as you know, Jackie Britton, my partner on Patriots.com as well, and Tom Flores, who's the color analyst for the Oakland Raiders, but more famously and justifiably so, the two-time Super Bowl-winning head coach of the Raiders, and he will join us in our second hour today. But right now, we want to get to our first phone call. Melvin's been waiting for a long time down in Tennessee, and Melvin, certainly appreciate you hanging with us. What's on your mind as we welcome you to the Bob Soucy Show here on Patriots.com?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
I'm good. Just a couple of questions. I know that I've heard John kind of touching this as he was going off air, but the situation with the wide receivers, how much of, the lack of offense, that we have seen, probably more in the Miami game, how much of that do you think is contributing as far as, we're being off by a lack of talent versus, a lack of practice? Because you got to think of people like Dobson, who haven't been out there. Gronkowski, of course, hadn't been out there. But the guys who he's been working with, the LaFells, the Tompkins, and stuff like that, from a talent standpoint, just didn't look good. And I can date back to, Tompkins kind of last year. I know it's hard to really talk about him because he looked good in that support preseason games always, but when he gets to the regular season, it just kind of goes downhill. So how much of the lack of offense, more from, like I said, the first game, and it's just the first game, I understand it, but do you think it's a lack of talent versus a lack of kind of just practice itself and getting into rhythm and all that stuff like that? Tim Wright included, That's another guy we got kind of quick. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Melvin, there are a lot of people who share the belief that there isn't as much talent here as they'd like to see and isn't as much talent as there is elsewhere. And I think you can certainly look at the Denver Broncos, for example, and you look at the receivers, the talent they have at receiver and tight end when you're talking about Demaryius Thomas and Julius Thomas, and then a guy like Emmanuel Sanders who goes in and has an immediate impact, and you say, well, boy, Peyton Manning has a full cupboard right there. And then people look at the Patriots' talent, and a lot of people on the national level and even in local circles don't believe it's equivalent. But I think there's enough talent here for this offense to thrive. And I do believe that, as Tom Brady talked about quite a bit today in his press conference, it is a matter of execution in practice repeatedly and carrying it over in games. I think it's also, you know, a matter of approach. And Bill Belichick was rather candid, I thought, in his teleconference with the media yesterday, as was McDaniels, about the need to be more balanced, and not only between run and pass, but also in terms of the use of the weapons at Tom's disposal. You know, I, for example, I think that Tim Wright is the guy that will have a place. Now, he wasn't reportedly wasn't at the early part of practice today. I'm not so sure what the situation is there, but one of the reporters that I talked to who had been out at the start of practice said that he was not visible at the start of practice, so we don't know what the issue is there, but nonetheless, this is a guy who I think, you know, caught 50-plus passes, had the 5 touchdowns last year for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and seemed to catch on pretty quickly in his first preseason appearance, and then caught a few balls against the Dolphins, and I think will have an expanded role, especially as we see Rob Gronkowski on the field more moving forward this season. Now, against the Minnesota Vikings, didn't play a whole lot. And again, I think the game plan for the Patriots, it seemed to be right from the outset, was to be physical and lean heavily on the run and use those heavy formations. So maybe he is more of a pass catcher than certainly a blocker as a tight end, really more of a bigger wide receiver, move tight end slash big wide receiver, you know, will fit better when it comes time to spread out defenses more and go to the air game, the air attack more frequently. But, you know, Kenbrell Tompkins, I think it was a bit of a surprise that he was not active for Sunday's game, but the Patriots made the decision to activate Aaron Dobson to make him one of the 46, and he got involved right away, but we didn't see much of him thereafter from Tom Brady. But again, I think because of the missed time in the offseason and the injury rehab and recovery during preseason and training camp, you know, he's a guy who is still a little bit behind. It's kind of like a hitter in baseball who misses spring training and then comes back in early April. That first month becomes his spring training in essence, and maybe that's what we're seeing with a guy like Aaron Dobson. I do still believe that Kenbrell Tompkins is a guy with whom Tom Brady is very comfortable and will find his niche in this offense. He was targeted 10 times in Miami. And as for Edelman, we know what kind of connection and chemistry he has with Tom. And Amendola's a guy that has been a bit enigmatic for a lot of us, wondering, you know, where his place is. But he's had big games for the Patriots, going back to the opener last year and more recently in Week 15 of last year against the Miami Dolphins, a 10-catch game. So, you know, I think there will be a place for him. And Tom, again, today acknowledged that they need to have a more conscious effort to get the ball spread around a bit. And moving forward, we'll see. The Patriots really right now statistically are about where they were the last couple of years, including 2 years ago when they set a record for points scored in a season, when you look at the number of yards they've totaled as well as points offensively. So, you know, we've been here before. This is a team that uses a lot of different personnel groups. This is a team that does more from game to game probably than most other teams around the league, if not all other teams around the league. So maybe it's going to take them a little bit longer, but you know, from this seat, from this vantage point, I still have the confidence that they're going to get things together. And we'll chat with Michael Ho'omanawanui momentarily, you know, about that very subject, how the offense continues to work in practice. To, as Tom Brady says, you execute in practice, well, that carries over to game reality. And, you know, we'll likely see that sooner rather than later, and hopefully as soon as this Sunday. Melvin, appreciate your time.
No problem. And thanks for taking my call and answering my question.
All right, Melvin with us from Tennessee. And again, if you'd like to chime in as well, dial 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500. We welcome your emails as well at webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. But first, we welcome in number 47 for the New England Patriots, Michael Ho'omanawanui, in his fifth year in the NFL, his third straight with the Pats. And I hope I get it right. I got it right, because that's what I'm going with game to game in addition to the who, man.
No, it's perfect. Appreciate it. Yep.
I'm sure you've heard it a million different ways, Mike.
Yeah, too many.
But it's nice nonetheless to have your name called, and it's been called frequently, of course, for the Patriots and by your coaches in a lot of different roles for this team the last couple of years. And I know you've had a setback to get this season started in preseason and training camp, but you've played both games and played extensively in both. How do you feel physically right now going into Week 3?
I feel good. Anytime you're coming off an injury, it takes a little bit of time. You try to simulate and practice, you know, game time situations, but everything's a little bit faster, and it's just different. So definitely playing these last two games, you know, in real time situations has been good for me, and I'm feeling better.
And when you get out there and play, I mean, it's not like you can kind of get acclimated a little bit more gently than other guys. I mean, you're thrown right into the mix primarily as a blocker, mm-hmm. and a very, very integral part of a very physical offense on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. How much did you enjoy, first, the physicality of that game, and how well do you think you guys did in setting the tone early on? I mean, even as early as that first series, though it was a three and out, nonetheless, to set the tone and be assertive offensively.
Well, it's definitely a point all week, you know, coming off of what we, you know, didn't do week one versus Miami. So it was definitely a point for us to play that style of game. And I think we were able to do that even, you know, with a slow start. And that's something that we're focusing on, you know, this week. We have to do better, get out there and get going early on instead of, you know, waiting.
Michael, the caller who was just on asked about diversity for this offense in terms of spreading the ball around, and it's something Bill, Josh, and Tom have all talked about a lot the last few days, being more balanced offensively and using more weapons offensively. It takes time, one knows, for an offense to come together. How has it gone? I know it's only a day into practice this week, but nonetheless, how do you guys feel in terms of coming around and developing a rhythm and getting to where you want to be sooner rather than later offensively?
First of all, I think it starts, you know, in the spring, in the summer, getting that camaraderie. There's a lot of new faces, you know, faces that haven't been here, you know, since I've been here. So you learn each other, you know, obviously learn names and positions and, you know, how it's going to, you know, mold the offense. And like you said, there's a lot of diversity, a lot of moving parts, guys playing multiple positions. And, you know, on Sundays, we just aim for that to help us, and it has. It's done us well here in the past, the years I've been here, and it'll continue to do so.
You work in concert not only with the receivers and your fellow tight ends, but also with the offensive linemen, the way you're utilized in this offense. And you had a lot of different people playing week one. Did you feel like last week with more continuity you guys started to develop more of that chemistry and coherency?
Definitely. You know, that's the plan. You know, you never want to be at your peak. At the beginning of the season, you want to build each and every week, you know, to get to the end of the season and, you know, play for postseason, you know, whatever it is. So, you know, you obviously don't want to be terrible at the beginning, but you just want to build each and every week, and that's what we're doing right now, and, you know, it'll be good for us.
Our guest is Michael Omanalanui, the Patriots tight end, of course, and the Oakland Raiders come in this Sunday at 0-2, but nonetheless, this is a team with a winning pedigree. They got a lot of experienced players, newcomers in particular on defense, who've been around a lot of victories, including Super Bowl championships, like Justin Tuck, for example, yep. Lamar Woodley, a guy who we know from the Pittsburgh Steelers days. Well, what do you make of this defense right now for the Raiders?
Definitely exactly what you said, a lot of experience, a lot of veteran players they brought in. A lot of successful veteran players that they brought in. So, you know, you're probably not going to see them make a lot of mistakes. You know, a lot of football has been played between these people. And, you know, we're just going to have to, you know, stick to our P's and Q's and do what we're told and execute, like Tom said. And if we do that, you know, we should be all right. But it's going to take a lot of work. And we've had a good start today. And, build on it tomorrow and through the rest of the week.
You open the season with a division opponent, a team you know well, and now you've got back-to-back games coming off Minnesota and preparing for Oakland, where while there is familiarity with some of those players, you don't see these teams a great deal. How is it preparing for games like this? I mean, how do you compare and contrast one with the other, a team you know well personnel-wise and scheme-wise, with one that really is a bit of an unknown?
Yeah, it's a huge difference. You know, thankfully for the technology that we have these days, you know, with iPads and all the film we can get, whether we're here, whether we're at home, whether we're on the road, you know, it's up to us, and our coaches do a great job of preparing us and giving us all the information. Then it's up to us, you know, to go home and digest it and get it ready for, you know, tomorrow and through the weekend. So a big plus to the technology that we have, you know, helps.
On that very subject, how much time is spent with video, and how do you do it with the mobile devices that you have?
Well, throughout the day, most of our days is meetings and film. You know, I don't think people realize that. I think they just think we go out there and, you know, throw on the pads and hit each other all day, which is not the case. So a lot of meeting time, and then when you go home, you know, get a little relaxation and eat dinner with your family, whatever it is. But after that, you know, probably a good couple hours, at least looking at the film or looking at notes, something to prepare you for the next day. Because if you don't, you know, you're going to be behind, and it's not going to help.
So when you go home at night, you're not just kicking your feet up and watching the latest sitcoms or docudramas or whatever. You're into your iPad or watching video on your 60-inch. High def?
50.
50, okay, yeah. All right.
I don't have any really TV shows. The only one I kind of pay attention to is Ray Donovan, but that's on the DVR. So when I do have free time, usually after games, then I'll take a sneak peek at it. But other than that, it's football season.
And nice you go with a show that's about a Boston raised and bred character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. You've had an interesting offseason, I want to spend a little time on your experience in early March, because you and Johnny Hecker of the Rams were two of the guys selected to fly with the U.S. Navy's Blue Angels.
Mm-hmm.
First in general, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was unreal. I had the opportunity came about, and I jumped at it. I was real excited, and then, a couple of days before, I'm like kind of second-guessing myself. What am I getting myself into? But just an unbelievable experience, one I'll cherish for the rest of my life. I grew up watching, going to air shows with my dad, just really being fascinated, by the speed, the power, the noise, all of that. And like I said, when I had the opportunity, I had to take it.
How did the opportunity arise?
I had a good friend that works as in marketing, and he called him up, and they have their what equivalents to their summer training camp every winter in California. And at the time, I was in Phoenix, Arizona, so we took a drive over there. They have what's called VIP flights, so people are nominated, and we were able to get ourselves in there and enjoy a day of flying and seeing what their daily work is, entertaining people, but also getting the Navy out there and getting people to interested in it.
We're joined by Patriots tight end Michael Ho'omanawanui talking about his experience flying with the Navy Blue Angels. Did you spend any time training with them to prepare yourself for what it was going to be like?
No, it was a day of training, maybe about an hour seminar, just on techniques and maneuvers that we were going to be doing and how to take on the G-forces. So the breathing techniques and the squeezing of your body to push the blood back up to your brain so you don't pass out. Ejection, that was an eye-opener. you're flying with the best. These guys have thousands and thousands of flight time hours. So, I wasn't scared, but when they talked about the, ejection maneuvers and what I got to do, if it, does come to into play, it was definitely eye-opening, but obviously we didn't have to do that.
Yeah, thankfully that was only in preparation,
exactly.
Not reality.
Right.
And one of the pilots, as I understand it, is someone who came from the same high school in the hometown out of Central Catholic in Bloomington, Illinois, Lieutenant Ryan Chamberlain. Did you guys know one another before that?
No, not personally. I had known of him. My dad had coached at the high school for years, and I just remember the name. I think he was in the band, and did some other things around the school, but read up on him, and it was a small world, one playing in the NFL and one flying with the Blue Angels, elite jet team. So that made it even better.
And as it turns out, though other guys around the league can say, I run a 4.4, 4.5, mm-hmm. maybe even in your own locker room, you can say, hey, I broke the sound barrier.
Exactly.
I went faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah. It was definitely cool, to be in the plane, in the jet doing that, but from the video, you can't really tell, obviously, from outside watching. I'm sure you could see how fast we were going, but inside, it's pretty steady, and he just comes over the speaker and says, well, just broke the sound barrier. All right, well, I didn't really, you don't really feel it. The only time you really feel it is when you're slowing down from the speed, and then it kind of jolts you out of your seat.
The impact that it has on your body, you're going 6 G's,
mm-hmm.
you're hanging upside down, you're rolling over, you're being jarred around in your seat.
Yeah.
Anything comparable that you've ever experienced on a football field?
I'm sure at some point for a very short period of time. I think, playing this game, I think everyone's, taking their hits. And for a split second, I'm sure I've gotten mine. I can't remember it's probably pathetic that I can't remember it. But, I've had my fair share of hits, and pulling, I think, 7.3 G's for whatever it is, 8 seconds, definitely takes a different toll on your body. Not comparable to football.
Yeah. Michael Ho'omanawanui with us, and he usually does the hitting for the Patriots as a blocker primarily, but nonetheless has been a pass catcher for this team at critical times, like in the New Orleans game last year. And One wonders about the degree of difficulty. When your number is called and time comes your way, but you're not a guy who's catching the ball on a regular basis, is there a difficulty to that, or do you just simply have to be focused every snap that the ball may be thrown to you to prepare yourself physically for what might come your way?
Yeah, definitely. You have to have the mentality that the ball's coming to you each and every time. That's not even a thought. It's a game I've been playing for a long time, so... if it comes my way, you just got to make the most of it, and that's the bottom line. So it's what I try to do. It's what I've been able to do, hopefully you'll continue to do.
And I know you guys around here especially don't spend much time talking about what happened last year, last week even, but last season you made one of the most spectacular catches of the year in the NFL, not just for the Patriots, but the NFL, that one-handed grab in the back of the end zone against Miami. Is that simply instinct, or is there some practice that prepares you for that, something that comes to fruition on game day?
I guess you could say there's some practice, but it's not like we go out there and say, catch it with one hand. When you're tossing the ball around with whoever, it's just something every 10 balls, you try and catch, maybe one-handed. Surprisingly, it's been something I've done throughout high school, college, and in the pros, and it's not something I go out there and say, I'm going to catch this one hand. It just kind of happens. So, but going back to Miami, I would have traded in for a win, that's for sure.
Sure,
so,
absolutely. You know. The gloves help, too, I would imagine.
They do help. Yeah.
It's one of the things, you see so many guys now pick off balls with one hand. I mean, it's like they're catching a baseball or a tennis ball even.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Exactly.
With regards to your background, your dad, as you mentioned, was your high school coach, and he played college football at Illinois State. You wound up playing at the University of Illinois. Mm-hmm. The name Ho'oma Naunui, what are the origins? And how did you wind up in central Illinois amidst all the soybean and cornfields?
I ask myself that each and every day. So Ho'oma Naunui is Hawaiian, meeting patience, which I need to work on. I'll be the first one to tell you. I need to work on it for a long time. But my father was born and raised in Hawaii and played Eastern Arizona Junior College football and then to Illinois State University, where I met my mother, and they decided to stay. And that's why.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
Yeah. Do you get out to the islands at all?
Very often. My wife of 2 months. Now,
congratulations.
Thank you. Is from Hawaii, so in the off season we get back as much as we can. Her family is actually from the town right next to my father's family, so it's easy to see both sides enjoy the weather.
And I would certainly wish you all the best moving forward. Hopefully you'll get a chance to go back to Hawaii and enjoy the weather in February after spending some time in Glendale.
Exactly.
And enjoying a Super Bowl victory.
That's the plan.
Michael, appreciate your patience today and your time.
All right. Appreciate chatting with you. Thank you very much.
Michael Ho'oma Naunui, tight end for the Patriots, with us. We'll continue with more right after this on Patriots.com.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of Domino's. the success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com Radio.
Tom takes the step, throwing to the near side, catch is made by Vereen, and he's in for a Patriots touchdown!
Have a hot Patriots take? Call Bob on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome back to our Subway Fresh broadcast studio inside Gillette Stadium. We invite you to dial in at 855-PATS-500 or on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. And, of course, you can email us at webradio@patriots.com, webradio@patriots.com. And in the NFL, more news today with regards to the Carolina Panthers, learning that the Panthers have removed Greg Hardy from the active roster until his domestic violence case is resolved. And, of course, as we know, the Patriots played in Minneapolis last week at the center of a storm for the NFL, with Adrian Peterson being taken off the active roster for that contest. And with the NFL, of course, heading into week number two of the regular campaign, there were a number of disturbing events in news reports that made it really a very turbulent time, and maybe the worst time in the NFL's history, at least in the eyes of many observers of this league, those who followed it for a long, long time. But as it turned out on Saturday, nonetheless, there was football to be played, and Scott Zolak and I were in the booth, of course, at TCF Bank Stadium to watch the Patriots confront the Minnesota Vikings, who without Peterson got off to a very promising start in that game. They took the opening kickoff and in seven plays went 80 yards with Matt Cassel completing a 25-yard pass to fullback Matt Asiata, who was spelling Peterson in the contest and will be doing so hereafter for a long time this season for the Vikings, of course. Asiata with that catch and run for 25 yards, putting Minnesota on top before the Patriots went three and out in their first series and punted back. But early in the next possession for the Vikings, as Minnesota was facing a second down and 16 from its 15-yard line, one of the leaders for the Patriots defense, Devin McCourty, coming off an all-pro campaign last year as a safety for this team, made a turning point play for New England, an interception for the Patriots that got things turned around, not only, of course, with that particular sequence, but as it turned out for the rest of the game, and with, again, Cassel in a position where the Vikings would normally ask him to protect the ball and manage the game well, something that he has done at times in the past. For example, in 2008 as a Patriot and for the Kansas City Chiefs as a Pro Bowler in 2010. But on Sunday afternoon, Matt Cassel was intercepted four times. And again, Devin McCourty was responsible for the first of those thefts.
Cassel from the gun, takes the snap, play fake, sets up for the pocket, has a lot of time to pump and throw deep down the middle. He has a receiver, and the ball is underthrown, picked off by McCourty. Devin back on his feet, runs it across the 50, 45-40. McCourty upfield to the right, across the 30-yard line, angles right to the 20. McCourty, 15-10. McCourty across the 5, reaching out for the pylon. He's out at the 1.
They had some good plays that first drive, and I think the key defensively is sometimes you just got to settle down. You know, we came on the sideline, talked about what they did. We were ready for it going forward, and I think we were able to lock in after that.
Hand off to Ridley, dives up the middle.
Got it.
And he broke the plane, it appears. He did. Touchdown, Patriots.
Attaboy defense, give you a short field.
Taken to snap, Allen has it. From the far hash, left hash, kick sailing to the sticks. The kick is good, and the Patriots have the lead. So Gostkowski breaks a 7-all tie with 32 seconds to go here in the opening quarter in Minneapolis. Shotgun snap to Cassel. He bumps, he steps up, he throws to the near side, and that ball picked off by Revis. A twisting interception at the 39-yard line of New England. Second pick thrown by Cassel today.
I have no clue what Cassel is looking at here because he runs the post corner, completely well-read by Darrell Revis. Turns, looks for the ball, plucks it. Easy pick for Revis.
Brady under center. Steps back now into the pistol. Bolden will shift to his left. Tom stops the left foot. Takes the snap. He's looking left. He throws the fade for Edelman. Touchdown, Patriots!
And he got croaked. Tom Brady, first one to get up and get over there and see Julian Edelman. I tell you what, great job by the quarterback, redirecting traffic.
Blair Walsh, he will attempt a 48-yard field goal. Gostkowski hit from the same spot off the left hash mark a bit earlier in this first half. And the kick is
got it.
Breaking through for the Patriots. The block is picked up by Chandler Jones running down the right side, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
Great job, not only just Chandler Jones getting outside, but the caravan. He blocks the kick.
He scoops the kick,
and then Devin McCourty leads the caravan out front. Whoa!
I knew that I would have got made fun of if I got caught by anyone on the field goal team. So I was just trying to get to the end zone, and that's what happened.
Second down and 7 from the far half. Shotgun snap to Cassel. Drops back. Looks to his right. He's chased by Chandler Jones, who catches him with a diving sack. Got him at the ankles. Took him down at the 20. Bill Belichick on the verge of a 200th career win in regular season play. Shotgun snap to Cassel, who turns away from pressure and looks right into the arms of Dante Hightower, who takes him down at the 31.
Boy.
Another New England sack.
The combination of Chandler Jones on the inside at the feet and Dante Hightower over the top, I'm telling you, moving forward, this combination of young guys. You shore up the middle of that defense. You're solid there in the back with Mayo. You know, we're pretty good in the secondary. You get a chance to do some special things defensively if you continue to get this kind of pressure off the edge.
That is the voice of Scott Zolak, broadcast partner on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the Patriots Radio Network. And, of course, Sunday we were in Minneapolis to watch the Patriots defeat the Vikings by a 30-7 final. And as Zoe talked about, So exciting about this defense this season coming in, and certainly one that produced the kind of performance many were expecting this past weekend. The Patriots' combination of pressure on quarterbacks and coverage in the secondary, and on Sunday against Matt Castle and the Vikings, the Patriots produced 4 interceptions and also recorded 6 sacks. Dante Hightower, Chandler Jones, each with 8 tackles, 2 sacks apiece, and of course the Patriots wound up providing Bill Belichick with his 200th regular season victory. And for quarterback Tom Brady, it was win number 149 as a starter, and that puts him in sole possession of third place among the winningest quarterbacks in NFL history. And as for Chandler Jones today, more news with regards to his performance against the Vikings. Chandler today was named the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. You'll recall that last November he was named the Player of the Month defensively in the conference. Well, today the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, again, 8 tackles, the 2 sacks, had another tackle for loss, really blew up a jet sweep by Minnesota early in that game, barreled right through the tight end to tackle the ball carrier, Jarius Wright, and Chandler Jones, as we just heard, also with really what proved to be a game-sealing play. For all intents and purposes, the Patriots seized control for good when Chandler Jones broke through the line, blocked a field goal attempt by Blair Walsh, one of the NFL's best long-distance kickers, and then Chandler Jones, speaking of long distances, covered 58 yards, picking the ball up off the bounce and running it down the right sideline as a defensive end slash outside linebacker. We saw him in that role a bit more, of course, this past Sunday. Chandler Jones showing really uncommon athleticism right there. Uncommon athleticism for anybody, but especially for a guy his size in the National Football League. Chandler Jones with a terrific effort against Minnesota. And for many who believe that this is going to be another step toward becoming a breakout performer for the Patriots, Chandler Jones again doing just that. Big stride on Sunday in Minneapolis toward becoming the kind of star that a lot of people believe he is capable of developing into. Now, with regards to the Pats offense, we touched on some of the inefficiencies on third down as well when they got short fields against the Vikings, but nonetheless, the Patriots doing enough against Minnesota, both offensively and defensively, and of course on top of that in special teams. Good day in particular for the kickers. Ryan Allen was terrific as a punter for the Patriots, and Stephen Gostkowski was perfect as well. A couple of long field goals for him, and Gostkowski continues his strong start to 2014. So for the Pats again, in all three phases, though certainly it was far from a satisfactory performance in the eyes of many, including the quarterback Tom Brady, in particular in the second half with the Pats not scoring a touchdown those final two quarters. Nonetheless, all three phases when put together on hold against the Minnesota Vikings with a much improved performance over week one. Now, we get an email with regards to the offense and play calling specifically. It comes from Pete in Augusta, Maine. Pete wants to know about play calling if anything with regards to play calling has to do with the offensive struggles at times. And Pete, I will say this, that we heard Josh McDaniels prior to the Minnesota game talk about an element that the Patriots want to get away from, and he referenced the number of pass attempts in Miami. And then that subject came up again earlier this week with Bill Belichick and Josh as well on a teleconference with media. And I certainly believe that when the Patriots look back on that performance against the Miami Dolphins, as so many of us did in the second half in particular, they got away from trying to run the ball, became overly reliant on the pass, especially with the game still within reach, a 3-point game late in that contest in which they were outscored eventually by a 23-0 score in the second half. But nonetheless, for a long, long while late into that game, either the Patriots had the advantage, were even, or were behind by only a field goal. So I think when they look back at that particular performance, it certainly shaped the approach to Minnesota, especially with the Vikings coming in off 5 sacks from the previous week against the St. Louis Rams. We saw the Pats again with those heavy sets, using Cameron Fleming, the extra tackle as a tight end, running the ball from the outset, Stephen Ridley with 2 carries on the first 3 plays, and Ridley would wind up rushing for more than 100 yards for the Patriots. And when the Pats have a back go over 100 yards, that is a recipe for victory. Now, there's circumstances associated with that. Oftentimes it could be a situation in which you have the lead late and you're running the ball more frequently, but nonetheless, for the Patriots on Sunday afternoon, Stephen Ridley's success was an indicator of what was to come for the team, with him surpassing the century mark and the Patriots going on to win. And as we move forward, as we've heard as well this week from both Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels, as well as Tom Brady earlier today. There's going to be a continued effort, as there always would be, for this team to become more balanced, more diversified. That doesn't necessarily mean going into a game and saying, okay, we have to run it an X number of plays and pass it X number of plays. How the defense structures its game plan, how the flow of the game is going, will dictate a lot of that, but certainly this is not a team that is going to become one-dimensional moving forward, and I think we'll continue to see the offense evolve, just as it's done in recent years. Even for all the difficulties the Patriots experienced, whether it was with personnel, including injuries last season, or inexperience with that personnel a year ago, the Pats nonetheless finished third in the league in points scored, and certainly at this stage of this season, they're about where they were the last couple of years through the first two games of the year. Still very much a work in progress, but nonetheless, the track record has always been with this quarterback, with this head coach in particular, that the Pats find their way. And what's encouraging about this past Sunday is even while the Vikings were not at full strength offensively, nonetheless, the Patriots did things in that contest that one will continue to expect them to do, and that's apply pressure on the quarterback and, as well, produce takeaways. This is a team that leads the NFL in takeaways, 7 already, 5 interceptions for the Patriots through the first two games. You know, I know a lot of people talk about the throws that were made or the errors in judgment by the quarterback of the Vikings, Matt Castle, but nonetheless, you look at the McCourty play, had a long way to go to get to that ball. It was really a sensational play coming over from safety. The Revis pick, some people I've heard on local talk radio here in Boston have suggested that it really wasn't a great play on his part, but nonetheless, he set up the receiver well and the quarterback well. It was the same play the Vikings had run earlier, and it took a somewhat twisting, acrobatic catch. He had to go up in the air and pick that ball off. He did it. A little bit later, Logan Ryan, I thought, had a terrific coverage and made a very fine play for the Patriots. Beyond that, Dominique Easley, the rookie, on a carom ball that careened off the face mask of a crossing receiver, turned around and had the reflexes to make that catch and intercept the ball for the Patriots, not only getting those takeaways but making plays out of them. McCourty goes 60 yards. Ryan was touched down by contact by the receiver, but initially, before there was replay review of the turnover, Logan Ryan had a long return deep into Minnesota territory. So I think what's exciting about this team is that not only do they have the potential to get takeaways, but they can make big plays, just as the Patriots of the early to mid-2000s repeatedly did, again, with a playmaking defense. We have seen examples of it thus far in the preseason of 2014, and especially in some of the joint practices that we were privy to between the Patriots and the Redskins and the Patriots and the Eagles, and now, of course, last week in Minneapolis. So I do believe that the offense will continue to evolve as it's always done, but the best thing about this past weekend was the fact that special teams and defense played such significant roles, because certainly for the Patriots to be successful in the postseason, as we've seen in the NFL time and again, it is defense that wins championships, and the Patriots have always had prolific offenses in the recent past. Now it certainly appears as though they've got a defense that can continue to make plays, and eventually, and again I say sooner rather than later, we're going to see this offense take advantage of those short fields it's gotten the last couple of weeks against the Dolphins in the second half and as well the Minnesota Vikings last week. We continue on the Bob Soucy Show from inside the Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium. We encourage you to call us on the Ace Ticket hotline at 508-298-0398 or at 855-PATS-500. That's 855-PATS-500. You can email us as well at webradio@patriots.com. Standing by as we turn now to my broadcast partner on Sundays, Scott Zolak. We will first have our producer, Kevin Collins, cue the appropriate introduction.
Like usual, I'm not prepared, so we're just going to go to him.
And, who needs an introduction? Certainly not Scott Zolak. I simply need to say, sup. Zo, how are you today? Scott Zolak with us. Zo, I know you just finished recording some stuff next door in the KSP studios for Patriots All Access and as well other programming. Your usual appearance each week as the host of the Patriots preview, looking ahead to the Oakland Raiders with Jermaine Wiggins and Matt Chatham. How's it going today? Well, apparently it's not going
I'll try
well
to get
as
it for you, Bobby.
We expect. Kevin Collins. Dial up Scott Zolak. Zo, are you there? All right, well, we'll go back to Scott Zolak.
We'll try again.
We've apparently hit a bad area, bad cell area, so we'll get back to Zoe momentarily. But he's been doing a lot of work here, does a lot, of course, with Patriots programming on the various shows associated with the Patriots, and, of course, has his regular slot 10 to 2 on our flagship station of the Patriots Radio Network, 98.5 The Sports Hub, co-hosting with Andy Gresh, and joins me each week in our broadcast booth for the Patriots Radio Network broadcast of the Patriots. And this week, of course, we will have the Oakland Raiders shortly after 1 o'clock with a kickoff on 98.5 The Sports Hub and our string of affiliates across New England. All right, Zoe, we're going to give this another attempt. Are you there?
Kind of M-Haul operation, this is. Yeah. This is like Naval Academy Radio. Yeah, I would accept that.
Well, and unfortunately, they got a Dayton grad rather than a Naval Academy grad. If it was a Navy grad, we would run an airtight ship-shaped outfit here. But unfortunately, we're not always smooth sailing from these studios. At least when I'm in from 4 to 6 on Wednesdays. But how are you today? All things considered, and
if I went to West Point, I would count on my thumb. You know, kind of how that goes.
If I'd gone to West Point, we'd have had this conversation over and done with by now.
Oh, dude, I'd be building airplanes right now. I'd be in aeronautical space and engineering. I'd be in that museum that they have down in Washington, D.C.
You know, and by the way, Scott Zolak cut from the cloth the kind of ilk that would produce graduates of either Distinguished Service Academy. This is one of the this is a young man coming out of high school in Western Pennsylvania, recruited by the likes of Duke and Harvard.
Duke and Harvard, I got 1180 on my college board. See, the trick is to let them think that you're dumb, but, you know, I'm the one always having the last laugh. You know, my mother cried when I go to Duke. She wanted me to be a doctor. I said, Mom, I'm the top guy coming out of the state of Pennsylvania. I can't go to Duke. They suck. They're 2-9 last year. So my dad wanted me to go to Louisville. I ended up going to Maryland, so kind of met in the middle and kind of settled it that way.
So normally I would say dumb like a fox, but in this case, dumb like a terrapin.
Damn right, snapping turtle. Not there. Those turtles are slow. Right. That's where we deceive you. Put your hand underwater, we'll bite it off.
All right, Zoe. Good stuff. But nonetheless, there's some stuff we got to talk about with regards to the Patriots at Minnesota and, of course, Oakland at New England. Well, your thoughts again, just recapping last Sunday. What stood out for you now as you've had a chance to digest what we watched in Minneapolis, and where does this team need to go in the days ahead to overcome some of the inefficiencies of Sunday?
Well, I think, let's talk about the inefficiencies real quick. I think offensively, obviously, and I echo the sentiments of the quarterback. And, I think that thing got a little overplayed, a little overblown. All Brady's telling you is that, hey, guys, I'm not worried about how we're doing in week 3. I'm trying to set the bar here to let the young guys know what's acceptable, what's unacceptable, because in the grand scheme, the big picture, it's how do we win in the divisional round? How do we win in an AFC championship game? It's not playing like that on offense, but special teams perspective, much better. Great punting by Ryan Allen. You had the block by Chandler Jones, the scoop, the score. And, of course, defensively, it's complimentary. It's pass rush up front. It's great coverage in the secondary. And, I think, what they drafted 3 years ago in that first round, where they moved around to get Dante Hightower, to get Chandler Jones, this is what you get them for. Pair them up on the same side, turn them loose, flex Vince Wilfork out. And I know, Bob, you talked to Bill Belichick. He asked him, hey, why move Vince outside? And people forget that when Vince was at Miami, he wasn't a nose tackle. He was a defensive tackle, an outside guy, an end guy, a guy to rush the passer. And there were a couple times last week where the zone blitz and they dropped Vince in coverage underneath where confused Castle a little bit. So they won in two phases of the game and the offense did what they had to do to win. I'm not at the stage where everybody's in panic over this offense. I caution people, go back to last year. They struggled a little on the road in Buffalo, and then the Jets game was probably one of the most horrific games I've seen them play as a team. So Brady's trying to set the tone here. It's a good team win last week, 30-7 on the road. You take that in the National Football League.
And so what do we know about the Oakland Raiders? Got a lot of guys that we've heard of and watched in the past elsewhere, though, guys that are north of 30, and they're 0-2 coming into New England, having gone across the country for the second time in 3 weeks.
I think they're the worst 0-2 football team in the league. I think they're the worst team in the league, flat out. And it's not just because, hey, that's the team we're playing next. You watch them play. I say this every year during the National Football League draft. They're a reason that the Minnesota Vikings You know, whether it's Arizona, whether it's Cleveland, you know. Yeah, you look at some of the NFL teams around the league. Give me some more. The St. Louis Rams, the Detroit Lions, picking receivers in the top 10 every year. There's a reason there's top 10 first-round heavy teams, because they're picking in the first six. Oakland's one of those teams. They find ways to lose football games, and they continue to do that through 2 weeks here.
Yeah, even Charles Woodson was very outspoken and very blunt Sunday. In fact, in his words, we suck. And essentially said they were an embarrassment. You've been around teams where guys have been fiery like that and forceful with their words. Does it have any ramifications, whether it's positive or negative? Is there kind of a carryover?
I mean, we'll see. I mean, they do have Justin Tuck. They do got Khalil Mack from the University of Buffalo. They drafted him, you know, highly rated overall pick. I mean, they do have some names. They really do. They got James Jones on the outside. They got Darren McFadden. They got Maurice Jones-Drew. So there are a lot of veterans there. But we've seen veteran teams across the league not have the ability to put it together. I just don't know that if Dennis Allen has that command of that room where he walks in. Charles Woodson, maybe. But, I mean, year 17 Charles Woodson as opposed to year 9 Charles Woodson, I think there's a big difference there.
And so they're a team that's allowed 200 yards rushing per game. So now the Pats come in off a very successful running effort against Minnesota, yet at the same time trying to get the offense going from a passing perspective.
Right.
What kind of balance do they strike on Sunday?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because I think, you know, you start to kind of piggyback off what Stephen Ridley did last week. And it might not even be Ridley. It might be Vereen. It might be, you know, Brandon Bolden. But I think a 100-yard rusher is in our books for this week. You know, and it's going to be interesting to see if they play guys like Jamie Collins, you know. Lots been talked about with Danny Amendola. You know, why was KT, Kembrell Tompkins, a healthy scratch last week? I think it's going to be systematic week to week. You know, it's going to be this guy versus that guy, you know, based on, you know, who they're playing and everything. So we got to wait and see who the inactives or actives are going to be, you know, an hour and a half before kickoff, and then we kind of tee things up from there.
Before I let you go, you pumped up about being back at Gillette?
What's that, buddy? Hold on. I'm a lost football fan here. Hi, guys. How you doing? Hey, thanks. All right. Go pass.
He is a man of the people.
I'm 3 years old. I was an old guy. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. No problem. Thank you.
No.
Stopping by. Sorry, Bob.
Now that's, you know what, that's perfectly timed, because that's what you do during everywhere. Breaks at home games. You're a man of the people, and you're often interacting with the fans in front of our booth. So are you excited about being back at Gillette?
I'm ecstatic to be back at Gillette, because after the game, I'm going to Splitsville for a post-game party. That place will be rocking. All the players will be there.
All right, so I know that there's an incentive for saying that, and, you know, it's all in the family, right. So we'll keep it that way.
You need any hookups over here for bowling or sushi, you come see me.
I'm going to endorse it because we had it in the media press room a couple of weeks ago. It was fantastic.
Phenomenal.
It was
good
great.
Stuff.
All right, thanks.
Buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
I'll see you Sunday.
Thank you. Scott Zolak with us, and we shift into our second hour here on the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots Radio. And, of course, we welcome you to dial in at 855-PATS-500 or to call our Ace Ticket hotline at 508-298-0398. And, of course, we encourage you to email as well at webradio@patriots.com. And Brian from Essex, Vermont, wrote about Tom Brady's demeanor. And I think you heard Scott address that as a former NFL quarterback in our conversation, Brian. I really think that much ado about nothing, frankly, most of the time, including going back to last year in Week 2 for the Patriots when Tom Brady was very animated in the New England victory over the New York Jets. And the same goes for the postgame press conference on Sunday in the wake of the victory over Minnesota. And I think he's a quarterback that has high standards, almost a perfectionist throughout his career. And certainly, again, there was a lot still to be concerned about with that offensive performance. And Tom Brady always keeps the standards high for himself and his teammates. And speaking of high standards, of course, in Oakland for years under Al Davis, the Raiders set out to just win. And that they did for so many years, establishing a tradition of excellence, including the four Super Bowl victories with Raiders under John Madden and later Tom Flores, in fact, winning twice under the latter coach for the Oakland Raiders, continuing to establish and perpetuate that tradition of excellence. And Tom Flores, after retiring from his head coaching duties, has gone into the radio booth working with Greg Papa on a weekly basis with the Oakland Raiders, and he takes time now to join us cross country. And Tom, we do appreciate the time. I know it's a very busy time for you guys. You've been doing a lot of packing and unpacking, and you head east to continue further east across the pond when the Raiders go to London to take on the Dolphins next week. Very difficult schedule to begin this new year and for the Raiders at 0-2. I mean, what is the state of this team in your mind?
right now, disappointment. They anticipated improvement this year. This was the third year of a three-year plan by Reggie McKenzie and Dennis Allen and Mark Davis, the Raider Davis family. And quite frankly, the first two games, they have been terrible. None accomplishing anything, not even coming close to winning either game. And especially last week, they were high in the kite and at home, a home opener, and to get dominated the way they were is just very disappointed. I'm disappointed as well because I spent most of my career as a Raider.
And Tom, we heard Charles Woodson's comments after last Sunday's game. He was certainly more than disappointed. It's a veteran locker room, and a lot of those guys have been on winning teams in the past. Those who've been brought over as part of this free agent spending spree by Reggie McKenzie this past offseason. Teams, I guess, can turn one way or the other. You've been successful as a head coach, and you coached outspoken players. How do you see the Raiders reacting to what Charles said in the week ahead as they come to New England?
Well, hopefully they'll react well. Hopefully they'll react positively because he was holding back nothing, as he shouldn't. What's there to hold back? I mean, they did suck. And the guys that the veterans that they brought in, Lamar Woodley, Antonio Smith, Justin Tuck, that they brought in to beef up that defensive line and stop the run. So far I've given up 200 yards a game average, and that's not good. So they need to step it up. When your defensive backs are making more than most of the tackles, that doesn't bode well for the offensive front seven. Right now, they're not playing very well. Their middle linebacker has missed the last two games with a concussion, and it's just on and on. So it's not a good start, and, hopefully they'll react well and suck it up and take their game to another level. That's what they have to do because we're not good enough to overcome a bad game. I mean, the Patriots, they set the bar very high and they have for many years and they've been able to back it up and they've got a quarterback that pushes them constantly. Even when you win, it's not good enough. So because you got to get better and that's the way you should look at it.
Interestingly too, a lot of veterans brought in, but the young guys, it seems, have more than held their own, granted only through two games, but Derek Carr, quarterback, for example, put on the spot against two very good defenses. Talking to some of the Patriots, they've been impressed by the way he's protected the ball and the way he's showed poise, sometimes under adverse circumstances, going up against those two defenses.
Yeah, he has done that. He's matured well beyond your average rookie, and he's not an average rookie. He has not been fazed by the lack of the overall team performance, and up until the very end, he's battling all the way, as he's proven the last two games, scoring late in the game, and he's a competitor. So there's no problem as far as Derek Carr is concerned. The offensive line is playing somewhat better. Running game is not up to par yet, and hopefully we'll get there. And it's typical early season for a lot of teams: drop balls, turnovers. Last week was drop balls and turnovers and lack of defense. So there are a lot of things that need to be fixed, need to get better. And that's what you work for. Even, like I said, even when you win, there are some things that still need to be fixed and get better. And so you can win better and win consistently. And nobody knows it more than the Patriots because that's what they do. Week in and week out, they're always knocking on the door.
And we talk with Tom Flores, the former head coach of the Oakland Raiders, again, a two-time Super Bowl champion. And you've watched Tom Brady up close and from afar during his NFL career. You were in Foxborough, of course, for a game that really launched the Patriots dynasty of the early 2000s, the Snow Globe game against the Oakland Raiders with the Tuck rule in effect. And you watch a guy like that, and you see the standards that he holds his teammates to, even after the win over Minnesota. Going to your point just a moment ago, Tom Brady was unsatisfied, and much has been made about that this week. But is that one of the things that stands out for you as a coach, when you've got a guy like that who's always holding himself accountable, but also his teammates raising the bar each week, regardless of whether you win or lose?
Well, I think so. I mean, he's a leader. He's a leader of the pack, and he's week in and week out, and year in and year out, he's proven his leadership. He backs it up. He doesn't point fingers. He doesn't pass the buck. He They said this is the way it is, and when he plays poorly, he gets mad at himself. I mean, that's the consummate competitor that he is. That was still a fumble back there, you know. and you tell him I said so.
Well, he had a good laugh.
I played quarterback in my professional career, and I know when it's a fumble and when it's not.
You know, and I don't want to get off track. You know, we'll go back to the game. Of course, that's the focus this weekend. But I still find it interesting when I listen to the NFL films highlights and the call of that game. You were expecting a review, though. I mean, I think that it was a surprise to the Patriots crew at the time, and certainly for most of us watching it on TV. But after the play, immediately you said to your partner Greg Papa, "This might be reviewed."
Yeah, because just watching the body language and watching everybody around the play. But you know, when the play happened, it's a fumble. Raiders have it, and you know, Brady got up and went to the bench, sat down, and you know, their defense came on the field, and everybody was ready for the next play. And then all of a sudden, it's reviewed, and then all heck broke loose, and that was the start of their string. And that was kind of it wasn't the end of ours, but that certainly was a big factor. You know, John Gruden was still the coach at the time.
Yeah. And, of course, the guy who forced that ball loose is reacquainted again with his former college teammate this weekend, the defensive back we've spoken of, Charles Woodson, late 30s, 17 years in the league. And Bill Belichick says still it's amazing just how good he looks on video. I mean, is he one of those guys, despite the age, who still has a lot of miles left in his tank for that team?
Well, he's still smart as ever. He's still, has a big play mentality. That's what he's done all his career. It sometimes it gets him in trouble, but he's always making big plays, interceptions, causing fumbles, you know, whatever, running back kicks early in his career. So he's, throughout his college and probably beyond that, and pro career, he's been a big play guy. And, you marvel at how he continues to do it. His legs continue to hold up they redo an old friendship back at Michigan. So maybe I'm sure the tuck rule thing will be shown on TV prior to the game. They'll make a big deal of it. Having said that, what's the weather back here? It's not going to snow, is it?
You know what? I'm hearing 80 degrees on Sunday. It's supposed to be cold here Friday, but I'm hearing 80 degrees on Sunday. I was told that today.
Well, we're going out to London right after the game, so I have to dress for two different climates, I guess.
Yeah, you know, and I want to bring that up because the Raiders have struggled on the East Coast in recent years, 14 straight losses in the Eastern time zone, and you were just on the coast 2 weeks ago for the Jets game. You go back home, you got to travel across the country again, and then you continue to London to play a game, a home-away-from-home game at Wembley Stadium. If you were coaching, how do you handle those circumstances? How do you address those circumstances with your team?
Well, you got to do it. You have no choice. So schedule is there, and they put the schedule out, and you have to comply with what the league asks you to do. Dennis Allen had the team go even an extra day earlier when we played the Jets to try to get used to it, the East Coast a little better, and maybe that would help, but it didn't help. Years ago in the old AFL days, we used to stay back and play, Boston, Buffalo, and New York. We stayed back there for all three games to save expense money. I've done it every way. There is no secret. There really is no secret. You do what you have to do. The one thing you don't want to do is make a big issue out of it because your team will react to that.
With Tom Flores, the former head coach of the Oakland Raiders, you worked for Al Davis, were around him for a long period of time, and of course now Mark owns the team. And speaking of big issues, the future of the Raiders, the stadium issue, the potential for relocating again, where do things stand right now for that franchise, and what's the latest with regards to the future of the Raiders?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not privy to everything that goes on behind closed doors and not being around the organization during the week. I just see them on weekends. Sometimes if I'm in town, I will go by and stop by and go watch a practice or two, but that's about it. I'm not on the inside anymore. But I do know that the Davis family, uh, is, is trying to keep the team in Oakland, trying to get a new stadium. But without a new stadium, there's no way they can stay in Oakland because it's, you know, that stadium and the San Diego Stadium are the two worst stadiums in professional football, or maybe professional sports. And they're also the oldest. And, you know, they can't seem to get anything done. The Niners now open in their new stadium. So it's, I don't know. There's all kinds of rumors, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. We'll just have to wait and see down the road.
And Tom, as we talked about at the top, the Raiders spent a lot of money in the offseason, but they spent it on veteran players after clearing a lot of dead money off their books. They went out and got the guys that we've talked about, Lamar Woodley, Justin Tuck, free agents, but a little bit long in the tooth. How difficult is it for the Oakland Raiders to go out and acquire younger free agents, guys closer to the primes of their careers, when you're in a situation in a stadium like that? You know, it seems to a lot of observers around the league that it's a very difficult sell. You're a proud Raider. What do you think about it?
Well, I am a proud Raider, and I was around when everybody looked forward to coming to the Raiders. If they were ever called by the Raiders, that was a big thrill. And if they were a free agent, that was the first team they looked to because of the records, because we were winning in those days. We had a great reputation. Unfortunately, that reputation has diminished. It's now not a desirable place to go if you're a young free agent. If you're an older free agent with a little gas in your tank, it might be a place to go to for the right money, and because maybe there is no other place to go. I don't know. You know, it's hard to say right now, but you know, the winning will solve that problem. Winning and getting the attitude back and the reputation back that we used to have, we just don't have it right now, and that's a, you know, everybody knows that.
One of the problems in not winning is that there's been a lack of continuity there, a turnover in the coaching ranks. Reggie McKenzie now in his third year. He comes from a great background, having been influenced by the likes of Ron Wolf and Ted Thompson, and yet it certainly seems as though pressure is intensifying. Stability or instability, how has that impacted this organization?
Well, that's going to impact, you know, especially if this combination of the work, you know, Reggie McKenzie, Dennis Allen, because they had a three-year plan. This is the third year. They have to show improvement. You know, the ownership has mentioned that more than once, that they have to show improvement. It doesn't necessarily mean winning, you know, 10 games, but they've got to win, you know, to a certain point and show that they're capable of winning, not capable of doing what they've done the last 2 weeks. So that's just not acceptable. And you sure don't want to, you know, have to make a change and start all over again. That's been going on way too long. And I'm hoping it doesn't happen, but we have to wait and see how it happens. You know, I mean, this league, you know, this business is win, and patience is not very strong anymore around the league. You can see every year there's you know, 8, 9, 10 coaches, new coaches every year. That's, you know, almost a third of the workforce.
And despite the struggles, despite the current state, Bill Belichick says it's a big physical team with a lot of speed, a team that kind of resembles the old Raider teams when you look at them physically. I mean, is there reason to believe this team can turn things around, albeit in a very difficult division when you're talking about three teams that went to the playoffs a year ago and the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Chiefs?
Well, it's kind of, that's the issue right now. I looked at the schedule before the season, you know, last year when I looked at after the end of the season. I said, oh, boy, they're not doing us any favors in that schedule, especially the first month. I said, you know, I felt if we could win, you know, if we could win at least maybe two games, or, you know, if we got hot, maybe more, but we haven't even won one yet. And going to New England it's never easy. And then going on to London, you know, Miami has improved some, and that's supposed to be our home game, and yet we're playing, you know, on the other side of the world, so. The schedule has not been kind to us, but there again, you have no control over that. You got to play it, and we are playing some. You know, we play two playoff teams in the NFC West, and Arizona, who almost made the playoffs. And then you're right, three playoff teams in our division. You know, plus New England. I mean, it's just it goes on and on.
Hey Tom, before I let you go, to talk again about the Patriot Raiders connections. Of course, Jim Plunkett, number one pick in New England, coming out of Stanford, and a guy who took a lot of hits early in his career on some very bad teams, but eventually ended his career as a Super Bowl champion multiple times. And he's a guy that certainly revealed a great deal of character throughout his career. What was it like to coach Jim Plunkett, and what can you say about the man, more so than the player, that made him the great leader of those teams that he was?
Well, Jim was a stand-up guy. He was good in the locker room because he blended with the players well. He didn't put himself separate because he was a quarterback. He intermixed. He was tough. He didn't blame past events. And he performed. He was big in big games. We gave him an opportunity. And we surrounded him with enough players, and then he delivered for us as a quarterback and as a leader. And he's just a good person, period. I mean, he, like I said, he's a stand-up guy, never complains. You ask him a question, you better expect his feelings, his true feelings, because that's the way he is. He answers you honestly, and so I've got a great relationship with him. I admired him even when he was way back in high school and college at Stanford.
Well, we appreciate you answering our questions in your candor today. Hope you have a safe trip, obviously, and safe travels as well as you guys go out to London. But thank you so much for the time today, and we'll see you on Sunday at Gillette.
Okay, see you guys.
Okay, thanks so much. Tom Flores, the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, and again, a two-time Super Bowl champion, now the longtime broadcaster as the color analyst on the Raiders Radio Network alongside Greg Papa, our guest. We'll continue with more. I'll chat with Jackie Britton from Patriots.com right after this on the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
It's time now for a call to the bullpen.
I just, like, can't read.
The Kraft Sports Productions bullpen.
I'm drunk on a plane.
Time now to welcome in Patriots team reporter Jackie Britton to the Bob Soucy Show.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome back to our Subway Fresh broadcast studios inside Gillette Stadium. And another warm welcome to Jackie Britton.
Wow, I really do no justice for myself on that. I can sing better than that. I want everybody to know.
And you can read.
I can read, right.
Set the record straight.
Yeah. I would personally, before we get into anything, like to thank the PFW guys for leaving a horrible odor in this room. Because there must have been onions or something that they ate in here. It smells horrific. Bob, I'm sorry that you have to sit in here and suffer this. Thankfully, I don't have to sit here for 2 hours.
Now. Well, I'm glad you referenced the food,
oh,
because
we
would hate for our listeners to think that the PFW guys just generally leave, you know, bad odors wherever they go.
That's not
a matter of hygiene.
Yeah, so thanks for that, guys. Andy was probably the culprit behind that. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, there were some overstuffed sandwiches
behind. I'm going to hold my nose when I talk on here.
Yes, and we'll work on it next week. We'll try to get some air freshener in here, some sanitizing wipes and whatnot.
Yeah, I'll talk to them about that.
Where I also work at 98.5 The Sports Hub, it's kind of a running joke that Tony Maserati and Michael Felger are a bit of germaphobes.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah,
like Greeny on ESPN?
Oh, they wipe down everything, and they've got aromatic candles burning during their
show. Wow, that sounds
show.
Like my kind of place.
Yeah, I now understand why.
Yeah.
I used to knock him. Yeah, your kind of place, and I think it's my kind of place, too.
I guess they spend so much time in there, you know. You eat, you live, whatever.
Exactly.
Anyway, sometimes
you eat and you don't put your food away.
Right.
Properly dispose of
it. PFW.
Others just leave it here on the counter. Several hours later, somebody else walks in to clean it up for you.
Yeah. Bombarded with odor. It's a great feeling.
Yeah. Hey, anyway. speaking of cleaning things up, Patriots have some work to do to clean up some of the offensive problems, as we know, through two games. But nonetheless, coming off a 37 win over Minnesota, your general thoughts about last weekend and the work ahead this week.
Okay, well, I think that Stephen Ridley had a game that he desperately needed to have. I think a good confidence booster for him coming off of 101 yards. So I think we've said this before, the Patriots, I think even Brady said that a lot of teams haven't done well running the ball against them, and that's because they are last in the league, the Raiders defense. So I think that they should have a lot of success doing that. And I would like to see, Ridley was definitely one of the key contributors last week. I would like to see him more, but in more challenging situations. Certainly the defense is, big up front, as a lot of guys have said today in the locker room. But I think that I'm interested to see Danny Amendola in this game and see how he, gets open. I mean, like, he's kind of been quiet, like, during the preseason and during the first two games. So I'm interested to see how he does against, this secondary. Because as Tom Brady said earlier today, they've definitely got a lot of contributors out there, Woodson being one of them, who Belichick says, play safety, but he's really a corner, so going to be all over having to kind of look for him. So my eyes will be on, I'm expecting Stephen Ridley to do well. I'm expecting him to do well, but I really want to see what Amendola does.
A lot of talk this week, not only about Danny, but all the receivers and how Tom Brady has to so-called spread the wealth.
Yeah.
Not only has he talked about it, Bill Belichick discussed it on his teleconference. Josh McDaniels as well asked about it. And Mark Daniels, the Providence Journal, just tweeted out a few moments ago that there was a meeting that Tom held, a little extra film session with the receivers before today's practice.
Okay.
So you've been a part of those discussions. You've been in the press conferences and listened to all of them speak on the topic. It certainly is very much on their minds as well as our minds.
Right, and they kind of, Julian Edelman was asked about it, and he kind of downplayed it. He was asked in the sense of, hey, seems like you're the only one who's open. Like, do you want to spread the wealth? And he kind of played it off as like, oh, well, some guys are having good days and some guys are having bad. But I think that there's a reason that Brady, for whatever reason, has more trust in Julian than it seems in Danny. But I don't know. Like, it just surprises me that going into year two, like, I would think enough time has passed to where Edelman would be more part of the picture in the offense. But
you mean Amendola?
Amendola, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, and I do think that, a factor definitely was the game plan and the Patriots' use of personnel last Sunday. A lot of heavy sets is noted, not as many spread formations, and they only passed it 22 times. So as Josh McDaniels pointed out during his teleconference, that certainly was a part of the reason why you didn't see this great distribution of wealth during the course of that game. But we didn't see a lot of Brandon LaFell.
Right,
again, the first two games he was targeted six times, no catches the first week.
Yeah.
Tim Wright showed some promise the first game, but wasn't involved.
Well, right, but Tim Wright's been here, a few weeks?
Right.
I mean, and Danny Amendola had, I thought, a really great camp. So I kind of expected, my expectations maybe were a little bit higher, but, it's only week three, so there's certainly nothing to, analyze too critically, and I'm certainly not trying to do that. I'm interested to see him in some of these, specific matchups, So, I think that I think another balanced offense would be good against this team. But I think I haven't made a score prediction yet, but I think it's safe to assume that the Patriots will win it at home. I mean, there's certainly a lot of hype, but, the Raiders coming off of, they're kind of desperate for a win, so you never know.
Raiders are desperate for a win on the East Coast. They've lost 14 straight games in the Eastern time zone, and again, the schedule makers doing them no favors early this season. They went to New York, lost to the Jets. Go home, they get routed by the Texans, they got to come to New England and play this weekend, they go to London and take on the Miami Dolphins, and they're an organization with a lot of veteran players who've been around winning football, but again, a young head coach, bit of instability, certainly already, it seems, with this regime, with Reggie McKenzie, the general manager, under a lot of heat, and with Dennis Allen, the head coach, under a lot of heat. So very adverse circumstances for the Raiders as they come east this week.
Yeah, it'll be a good. I'm interested also to see Derek Carr. I think he had a good first game, kind of mediocre second, but seems like he could spark some youth among the veterans and maybe what they need at quarterback. But so I'm interested to see him play. But the defense, I wouldn't mind watching that again. Chandler Jones, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Wouldn't mind seeing see what they come up with on turnovers or what. It kind of seemed like it became a game of okay, who's going to make the next big play? There's something about it. It's this competitive nature that kind of once one person makes an interception, it seems like they all kind of follow suit. It's really funny.
Well, and I think that's one of the things to look for this week. Now, Carr, for the most part, has protected the ball pretty well going up against two good defenses from the Jets and the Texans, but certainly not as good a secondary in either case as New England has. So
I
think that's really one of the interesting things to watch this weekend, coming off those interceptions, how the Patriots secondary, one, goes about its defense against Derek Carr, but two, on the other side of that, how he handles it,
right.
And especially if Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower, and that front seven can apply a lot of pressure.
I mean, Darrell Revis, like, wow. I think he could just really have his way, I think. I mean, that'll be, I think that'll be tough.
Jackie, you're working on a feature for Patriots.com. You do an individual matchup within the game each week, kind of the game within the game. And in this case, it is a matter of reacquaintances. Tom Brady of getting reacquainted with his old college teammate and friend Charles Woodson. Those guys played together briefly at Michigan. When Tom was a young player, an understudy quarterback, Charles Woodson was a star for the Wolverines.
Yep.
But they were both on a Rose Bowl winning team in 1997.
Yeah, so that's what I'm working on right now as we speak. So it's been interesting. The little tail of the tape, go back in history, you know, kind of dig up some of those stats and information, which has been fun, a little history lesson for me. But, yeah, that's going to be the matchup, and I'm excited about it. Brady had a lot of really good things to say. He wouldn't say much, though, about the Tuck Rule game and if him and Woodson, he's like, I don't think we've ever actually talked about it, but that's got to be a lie, right? I mean, come on.
of course. A little sarcasm.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever actually talked about it. Well, I don't know if I'm buying that one.
In that case, it's not really a tale of the tape. It's more of the legend of the tape, the video that we have seen a countless number of times through the years. Tom Flores was just on. He was the color commentator then, as he will be this weekend, and a former Raiders coach, and he still believes it's a fumble. But, of course, Patriot fans still think about the roughing the passer call that was unjustified, going back to the Ben Dreith game. So, you know, I guess it goes both ways on both coasts with these two teams meeting once again.
Certainly, as I put it in the stories, the elephant in the room anytime the Raiders are among the discussion with the Patriots is that game, that moment, and, you know, it's however you want to settle it.
What else did you hear today in the locker room? You had a chance to get around with the media on a Wednesday, which means a large media contingent, but it also means a lot of players available. Who did you talk to, and what did you hear?
Rob Gronkowski spoke to the media today. He said that he's, you know, feeling good. That's pretty much all he says. But, you know, he said, like, someone asked him, which I thought was an interesting question, like, are you ready to make that, like, get hit really big again? Like, just to know mentally that you can go through that. And he's kind of like, look, I've been through some big hits, you know? So I think that mentally he's over that part. I mean, I get the hesitation at first, like when you're coming back on the field after major injuries, but, you know, I didn't get the vibe that he's worried about that at all. Like, I don't think it slowed him down mentally. So he was good. Wow. Who else did we talk to? It was such a whirlwind. Sebastian Vollmer a little bit. He didn't really have a whole lot to say about, I mean, just that their defensive front, which pretty much mimics everything Coach Belichick said. They're big, physical, aggressive veterans, so they definitely know what they're doing. But I don't really remember who else we talked to.
Stephen Ridley was available, and you talked a little bit about Stephen today.
Yeah, Stephen Ridley was in there. I don't even think he had anything that remarkable. He is probably one of my favorite players, though, to talk to. He's just really good. He gives really, he understands that we have a job to do as well. And so, like, when he was going through fumbling problems, like, he took it like a man, you know? Like, he, very stand-up guy. Love interviewing him just because he gives you, he's good at answering questions, you know? He's very well-spoken. But he's also saying, look, like, we're excited to be home, but there's no way we're underestimating this team just because they're 0-2, which, you know, they don't do anyway. But, you know, you look at a team like the Raiders, who are the worst in the league at defending the run, and they're 0-2. They're historically, you know, not that great. You kind of think, well, it's the cat's in the bag, but not necessarily the case. That's what a lot of guys are saying in there. You're going to expect them to be hungry, and they're going to demand the best out of the Patriots on Sunday.
Yeah, and I want to echo something you said, too, about Steven, because he's not run away from his fumbling problems when it comes to the media. He's had to talk about it repeatedly
countless times,
of years, and he always does face the music.
And I do feel like I feel bad that he has to go through that, but you know, I mean, they know that that's what they sign up for. You know, he has never been afraid to face the media. He's never ever been rude about about it or answering questions. So he's just a good stand-up guy. He did go to LSU, though, so, you know, I don't really care
for that. And you have a problem with that because...
It's just SEC. It's too competitive. You know, it's just like a red flag. It's an X on my list.
And so as a Georgia fan, do you hold a similar bias against like Dante Hightower, for example, who went to Alabama?
They're not the rivals that we don't face Alabama, LSU a whole lot. So they're not rivals by any means, but they're in the SEC. So they're constantly always going to be our competition, you know? But it's not like South Carolina, who we have to play pretty much every year and have like a really bad
Or
Bad
Florida,
blood
for example.
Oh, don't even get started on Florida. Team. No. Yeah. No. Oh, yeah, don't. Mm-mm. Nope. Not talking about any of that.
Okay. Let's talk a little more Patriots with Jackie Britton from Patriots.com. You'll appear on Patriots All Access this Friday, of course. And,
right.
Of course, throughout the week, provide coverage and well pre- and post-game on Sunday. What else is on tap? Talked about the personal matchup, the friendship of Tom Brady and Charles Woodson, and, of course, that game within the game. But what else you got in the works right now?
You were in the Belichick press conference this morning. I thought that was very entertaining. If anyone has not listened to it, you should go to Patriots.com right now and listen to it. The man is a walking history book, as someone said today. He was very, very entertaining. There's the tradition is happening tonight. We will be covering that. Teddy Bruschi is being honored at the TD Garden in Boston. So we will have that, on our website tonight. I could not make that. So, but we are covering it and we will have that up there. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else going on next week. There's a couple of things. Matt Light and his annual shootout. We'll go to that. And, the playground build. So there's a couple of things out in the community coming up that we'll go to, but, Patriots land. We're trying to. Everybody's just excited about the home game. I'm excited to be here for the weekend. You know, there's nothing like a game in the fall at Gillette Stadium. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it seems like forever since the Patriots have been home. It's really been a long, long time since week three of the preseason. And the weather, though the temperature will drop significantly on Friday, nonetheless supposed to rebound. And I was told today that we may have 80 degrees at game time.
That would be, I mean, I would not complain about that. At all. I would welcome that. I would embrace that 100%. That'd be great.
Like Athens.
Right. I would.
September 7th.
Yeah. You know what? Raise the temperature, raise the humidity. Well, maybe not the humidity, but that'd be good. I would like that. I'd appreciate that.
And, of course, Patriot fans hope that they can raise the roof with New England's second win in
as many
weeks. I
know. I'm interested to see how the turnout will be.
Well, the Patriots have been selling out here at Gillette. What's it, up to 219 now? 219 consecutive sellouts for the Patriots, including preseason and postseason. So, again, Sunday, a lot of excitement. 1 o'clock kickoff, Patriots and the Raiders. We will see you at Gillette, and we'll continue to watch for you on Patriots.com.
Can't wait. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Jackie Britton, thank you. Jackie Britton of Patriots.com with us. And again, the Patriots and the Oakland Raiders to confront one another this Sunday at 1 o'clock. And we've talked a little bit about some of the statistics for Oakland defensively in particular. And the Raiders have allowed, as Jackie told you, 200 yards rushing per game. And it's a team that has been behind in a big way early in games. Raiders have been outscored the first three quarters of contests by a 40-7 margin. They've had only two takeaways, too. And as a team that hasn't been able to stop the run, hasn't been able to force turnovers for the most part through two games, and granted, it is only two games, but nonetheless, the Raiders have found themselves in arrears in a big way. Much of their yardage and scoring thus far has been the last couple of series. A game, for example, against the New York Jets in week one. Score was 19-14. The final, you heard Rex Ryan perhaps after the game. He said we should have blown them out, in essence, to summarize what his thoughts were. The Jets made a lot of mistakes, per usual, guilty of a lot of penalties in that game, and the Jets won by five. But the Raiders had only 11 first downs, just 158 net yards, and 96 of those were in the last two series of the game, and five of those 11 first downs were in the last two series of games. And then the Houston Texans routed Oakland in the Raiders' home opener last week, 22 first downs, over 360 net yards. But in the fourth quarter, 11 of those 22 first downs with 162 of those net yards in the final quarter of play, both touchdowns for the Raiders again after the game had gotten out of hand with Houston jumping to the huge lead last Sunday and winning behind a very conservative game plan. And so the Raiders, statistically as a defense, giving up a lot of yardage on the ground, thus far, Geno Smith, Ryan Fitzpatrick have thrown for high percentages, completions comparable to their attempts, and they haven't had to throw for a lot of yardage or with great frequency in comparison to some of their counterparts around the league because they've run with such success and have been up by wide margins in the early going. But as we've talked about, the Patriots nonetheless far from flawless last week in their performance offensively, but this is a great opportunity being back at home to continue the process of routing into form, really in every phase. And they're going up against a rookie quarterback who, as noted, has played pretty well, all things considered, being thrown into the NFL as a first-year player, starting right away, and going up against a defense like the New York Jets, followed by a defense led by J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans. But against the Patriots, he's going to face probably a far more challenging set of circumstances, being on the road against Darrell Revis and that secondary, which seems a notch above at least both the Jets and the Houston Texans. Oakland, as we've talked about, with the losing streak in the Eastern Time Zone, 14 consecutive defeats when playing in the Eastern Time Zone. Tom Flores noted it a little earlier, and when the Jets came out to the East Coast to play their season opener against, or the Raiders came out to the East Coast to play their season opener against the Jets, Dennis Allen actually had the team leave on a Thursday. They were out in New York on a Thursday for that Sunday game, and again, they were beaten, got off to a poor start, and really couldn't muster much offense against New York in that contest. Now they've gone cross-country back home to play the game against Houston. They've got to fly back across the country, and it's an early kickoff, of course, which does not bode well for Oakland with that 1 o'clock kickoff. And still, as Jackie talked about, to a man, starting with the head coach, as one would expect here in New England, the Patriots very, very respectful. And Bill Belichick made a comment today that certainly seems apropos with regards to Oakland and the state of that team. You've got a lot of proud veterans on that team, guys who come from winning cultures. Justin Tuck, as we know, a two-time Super Bowl champion. As we know, unfortunately, and all too well, a two-time Super Bowl champion for the New York Giants. Charles Woodson, a guy who was with the Raiders back in the early 2000s when they were winning consecutive division championships, getting to the Super Bowl to take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their former coach, John Gruden. He's a guy that certainly still, it seems, has miles in the tank and comes from a very proud pedigree when you're talking about players who were reared in a winning football culture, regardless of what's taken place for the Raiders the last decade or so. But, you know, overall, it's a proud group. It's a group that knows how to win, certainly has experienced a lot of success in the NFL. And nonetheless, they're 0-2, and as Bill Belichick discussed, they're kind of where the Patriots were last week. Maybe to a greater extent, a sense of desperation for Oakland. But a week ago, the Patriots were coming off a defeat against the Dolphins. They were outscored 23-0 in the second half. They had to go to Minnesota on the road. They were able to regroup and win that game by the 37 final. And now they take on a Raiders team who's in a spot much like the Patriots were a week ago, again, with the Raiders coming in here, a desperate football team. And one thing that we know about the Patriots, again, they're going to respect everybody they play, and the constant theme the last few days has been, this is a very experienced team. They may be struggling at the moment, but they got a lot of guys who know how to win. They're big. They're physical. They do have a lot of speed. They will press with their defensive backs. There are going to be a lot of tight throws for Tom Brady, one presumes, based on what we've heard from the players and the coaches coming up on Sunday. So when you're talking about this Patriots offense, again, trying to round into form offensively in the passing game, something to keep in mind. You've got a couple of guys for the Raiders who in the past have applied a lot of pressure in Justin Tuck and Lamar Woodley, specifically against the Patriots. Now, they haven't gotten to the quarterbacks thus far a great deal with New York and Houston, but nonetheless, you know, there are still guys whose track records suggest they can rush the passer with great effectiveness. And again, that was something we heard today from several of the Patriots offensive players, including Sebastian Vollmer, as Jackie discussed in our tour of the locker room. A couple of notes regarding the Patriots practice report and injuries. Don Jones, a special teamer for the Pats, the former Miami Dolphin, did not participate today. Bothered, according to the practice participation and injury report, with a hamstring injury. Gerard Mayo did not participate today, but it is a non-injury-related absence for Gerard Mayo. Again, non-injury-related. Now, limited participation for Michael Buchanan, who's been out the first couple of games, and Jamie Collins. At least the good news there is that Jamie Collins did have some participation. He was not an active participant for the Patriots in the final practice last week for New England, getting ready for Minnesota, and of course did not play in the game on Sunday, but at least today limited participation for him because of the thigh issue. Dan Connolly listed on the report with limited participation because of a knee problem. Alfonso Dennard, shoulder, limited participation after he was scratched from the lineup on Sunday. Julian Edelman limited with the back issue. Rob Gronkowski limited because of the knee. Silver Salinga continues to have limited participation in practice because of a hand issue that goes back to the preseason. For Shane Vereen, also today limited participation due to a shoulder problem. And Ryan Wendell, who did not play on Sunday because of a knee injury, also today listed with limited participation. As for the Oakland Raiders, nobody missed practice altogether, but Maurice Jones-Drew has been bothered by a hand problem this season, did not play in one of the first two games of the year and did not participate today. So I should take that back. He did not participate today for the Oakland Raiders. In fact, now as we take a look at their report, you got three guys with limited participation and then five who did not participate at all, including Maurice Jones-Drew, C.O. Moore, a linebacker, Carlos Rogers, part of that veteran secondary, a guy who was acquired as a free agent from the San Francisco 49ers, wide receiver Rod Streeter, and Justin Tuck, the defensive end, out with what was listed as an illness today for the Oakland Raiders. So you've got the Oakland Raiders trying to prepare for an East Coast trip, and today, as they went through their practice, they had five guys who did not participate in preparation for the Patriots on Sunday. A couple of other thoughts before we close it out here in our final moments on the show. And again, we're on every Wednesday from 4 to 6. And next week we'll review the Oakland contest and preview the Patriots' first primetime showdown as they travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs on September 29th. With that 8:30 kickoff in Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium. But for the Patriots, again, the focus on getting better themselves. Obviously, they're preparing for Oakland, what they expect to see scheme-wise for the Oakland Raiders this Sunday afternoon, but also, as we noted, trying to address some of the issues that need resolving out of the first 2 weeks of the campaign. We look back on the Minnesota contest, and we talked about the positive signs that we witnessed from the Patriots defense, again with the interceptions, the work of the special teams unit, Steven Gostkowski along with Ryan Allen, Julian Edelman, a guy very much a factor in the passing game with Tom Brady, Stephen Ridley, of course, rushing the ball so well, the offensive line holding up much better, the scheme and the approach to set a physical tone against the Minnesota Vikings, and from a defensive standpoint, not only the work of the Patriots secondary and Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower with the accolades that they have earned in the wake of that performance, in Jones' case, the defensive player of the week in the AFC. But beyond that, I think a couple of other things stand out about the Patriots on Sunday afternoon against Minnesota. One, the return of Chris Jones. And the Patriots' defensive line certainly affected by his absence in the opener against the Miami Dolphins. Talked to Chris today in the locker room. Very much excited about a return to the field last week, and in particular this week, now getting a chance to play his first home game. He did not play in the preseason at home because he was injured, suffered a left ankle injury against the Washington Redskins in that preseason contest. So Chris Jones comes back for the Pats last week, and one would expect to see him continue to get more fully involved defensively. But Scott Zolak, as we discussed earlier, noted the move of Vince Wilfork going outside for the Pats, the maneuverability of the defense, the flexibility. There were adjustments that were made after that first series for Minnesota last Sunday, and Jerod Mayo had a very big impact on that game, with Minnesota scoring so easily, it seemed, on that first possession. The Patriots did mix things up thereafter, and certainly Jerod Mayo was another guy who definitely played a key role in turning things around defensively to go with Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower. So as the Patriots move forward, that's another encouraging sign from this team, the ability to adapt and adjust, and the experience that they have with a guy like Mayo being able to do what he does, whether it's coming on a run blitz inside, as we saw on occasion, or coming to blitz the quarterback, as we saw him apply a pretty punishing blow to Castle early in that contest. Nonetheless, there's a lot to like and a lot to be encouraged by, considering the performance last week, as one moves forward into the very near and long-term future here in 2014 for the Patriots. Of course, coming back home to take on the Oakland Raiders Sunday with the 1 o'clock kickoff, The Pats have an opportunity to start generating some momentum at home. They begin the season with three of the first four on the road. As noted, they will go to Kansas City for that Monday night affair, but then they come back home to take on a very good Cincinnati team. The Bengals certainly very, very impressive thus far. That's a Sunday night game on October 5th. Then it's back on the road again in Buffalo. But then you look at the schedule in October. Home against the Jets. Home against the Bears. Home against Denver going into the bye week. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Certainly the players and the coaches aren't going to do that, but you look at the schedule. Patriots get through these next 2 weeks against Oakland and Kansas City in good stead. Then they're in a situation where they're going to be at home for four of the next five heading into the bye. And remember last year, they went 8-0 at home at Gillette Stadium. So this is a team that has been so good traditionally at Gillette. For the Patriots, when you look at the record at home, going back to 2002 at Gillette Stadium in the regular season, 81-15, an .844 winning percentage. And they begin the year really with a tough slate considering the three road games among the first four contests overall. But now there's the opportunity, of course, to come back home and continue to get right offensively while building on all the positives that took place in Minneapolis last Sunday. And they get to do it against a team that really is struggling. But as we know, the Raiders will be a desperate football team for a lot of different reasons. Really right now, it's a crossroads for Dennis Allen as the head coach there. Year number three for general manager Reggie McKenzie. In fairness to him, he had a lot of issues to resolve, to clean up. The Raiders had really a lot of dead money on their books. They went into free agency. They needed to spend a lot to meet the requirements of the NFL, and they spent in the neighborhood of $60 million on free agents. Thus far, the moves haven't paid off a great deal, but nonetheless, Reggie McKenzie has tried to change the culture for Oakland. As Tom Flores said, they started out with a three-year plan. Unfortunately for them, the history for the Raiders is that every 3 years or so, if not sooner, in fact, they turn things over. And they've done it continuously, whether it was with Al Davis or, of course, since his son Mark took over the franchise after Al Davis's death. The Raiders have shown very little patience and a lack of stick-to-itiveness when it comes to allowing a coach and administration to come in and have the kind of time you might need to turn things around in the NFL. It's a win-now business, but especially in Oakland, there is no patience, and there hasn't been for a long period of time. And you go back to, for example, an 8-8 season for Hugh Jackson, or when Tom Cable was displaced as the head coach after he had shown some promising signs, albeit with an interesting personality, to say the least. But not since John Gruden has there been any sense, any notion of stability for the Raiders as their head coaching position is concerned. Bill Callahan had a very successful first year, of course, leading the Raiders against Gruden's Buccaneers in the Super Bowl. But, thereafter, it was a short-lived tenure for him. Rich Gannon was the quarterback for that Super Bowl year. He was an MVP in the NFL, but troubled by neck issues, was forced into retirement. And that started spinning the wheel for the Raiders when it comes to the quarterback position. And so Derek Carr comes in this Sunday as the 18th different quarterback to start for Oakland since that Super Bowl season. Now, that does include some limited appearances for Gannon, but nonetheless, 18 quarterbacks starting for the Oakland Raiders since Oakland won the AFC. And they haven't had a winning season since. They've gone through two 8-8 seasons, but otherwise it's been double-figure losses for Oakland, 9 of the last 11 years. So the Raiders, again, try to turn things around. It's been a very, very difficult time for a proud franchise with, you know, a great history. You're talking about a team that during the 70s and the 80s, really going back to the late 60s, in fact, was a franchise that certainly went about things differently. We know about the Rebels of Oakland and some of the characters they had and the personality of their teams and the intimidation that they often won with. Nonetheless, over the course of the last decade, they have been far from a team that upholds that tradition of excellence and lives the motto of Al Davis to just win, baby. So they come in on Sunday, again, a troubled football team. The Patriots, one would hope, will get off to a much better start. They've been behind early in games. They have the block punt that set up the Dolphins for a gift-wrapped opportunity and a 7-0 lead in the season opener. Then last week, the Vikings on that opening possession went 80 yards en route to the score. But one would expect the Patriots to start in a much different fashion this weekend against the Oakland Raiders and have a more balanced approach, and yet at the same time We know this. The Patriots came out on Sunday against Minnesota, showed they could run the ball and be a physical football team, and now they're going up against a team that thus far, albeit through only two games, it's a small sampling, has nonetheless been able to answer those teams that have been physical and have run with great frequency. Again, 200 yards rushing per contest. So we look forward to the matchup of the Patriots and the Raiders. We don't make predictions on this show. Yeah, I'm one of those guys that is always cautiously optimistic. I certainly thought last week would be a very, very difficult game going to Minnesota before the circumstances came to light and Adrian Peterson was out of the lineup. Even without Peterson, certainly the Vikings early in that game showed some signs of giving the Patriots some problems. The Patriots did adjust on defense, and they certainly did enough in all three phases to win going away. And now they take on the Oakland Raiders. Realistically, this shouldn't be a difficult game for the Pats, but as we know, week to week in the NFL, and you only have to look back at the first 2 weeks of this season, a lot can change. You're only as good as the next possession. And for the Patriots, the next possession is shortly after 1 o'clock on Sunday. And I'll be joined by Scott Zolak for the broadcast on the Patriots Radio Network. We will talk to you again on Wednesday on the Bob Soucy Show from 4 to 6 on Patriots.com, and look forward to that. Thanks so much for listening today. So long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side. Catch made by Edelman. Prince to the end zone. Oh. And he runs it past the five. He dives to the end zone. Touchdown! And the lead for the Patriots.
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off Ridley. Runs it right. Ridley dives to the goal line. He's in again. Touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning. Play fake. A throw to the near side. Ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving break on the ball.
He's got it.
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it.
Patriots take over.
This place is berserk.
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.